Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. On this weekend show, we're going to be sticking a little bit more to company-specific news that move the needle for a couple stocks that we follow, as well as some trading strategies for broad averages and a wide range of sectors. We start off the show with Brian Lenny, founder of the Junior Stock Review website, and then we're following Brian up with a more general conversation with Dana Lyons, fund manager, to take us through what sectors he sees opportunities in. So we're kicking off with Brian Lenny. Now, Brian, we want to start off by simply talking about a couple key news events that have come out of the resource sector. The first one being G Mining merging with Reunion Gold, or essentially emerging with Reunion Gold. Here's the company will be taking over Reunion's projects as they are just completing their own mine in Brazil. I know you follow G Mining closely in your newsletter and to your subscribers. Explain to us what you think of this deal where a company really is doubling in size.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I do like this deal. I think it's a fantastic deal. And it's one that actually caught me by surprise. I wasn't expecting, I thought there might be a deal coming or in place at some point, because when I talked to LP in a call, he had said right from the beginning that they wanted to expand and add value to a development project. But they truly went big game hunting with a merger or acquisition of Reunion. You know, 4 million ounces, roughly 2 grams per ton, open pittable. This is sort of what world-class looks like, I think, in gold deposits right now. And you can say what you want about the jurisdiction, but I think that this is a big deal. And especially with they're going to have production at Tocantinzinho, like you said, probably in the next 3 months, 4 months, they're in a tremendous position to generate cash flow and then develop what is basically, I would say, close to a world-class deposit at Oko. And yeah, this is a great deal. And you know, I think for investors that are looking for growth, this is one of those deals where you've got probably or arguably the best mine building team out there. And that was my original premise of investing with Tocantinzinho. It wasn't because I loved Tocantinzinho, but it was because I thought the probability of these guys being successful and putting into production was quite high. And now you've got an asset that's going to be producing and world-class development asset. And I think there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on G Mining. So for me, this is a deal that puts them directly on the map and directly in line with becoming, you know, the gold sector's next mid-tier for guys that are looking for growth and, you know, a midpoint in risk. I think it lines up great.
Yeah, Brian, it's nice to see them massing up. And just when you thought it was exciting enough with them going into first gold pour soon, you know, in the next quarter or so, they do this big transaction. You said in the onset, though, you can say what you want about the jurisdiction. Let's talk about Guyana, because there has been a lot of action there recently. Mako Mining just took over Gold Source Mines in Guyana. We just had Omai Gold Mines on there. They've got a big 4 million ounce resource as well. And Guyana as a country just made that huge oil discovery about a decade ago that's changing the country. What do you think about diversifying into Guyana?
I think it's more like this. I think South America can be tough. And I think a lot of these jurisdictions in there, whether it's Guyana, Brazil, Peru, Chile, most of them have this sort of cycle when they're in favor or out of favor, or maybe investable and not investable. I would say, you know, I partially agree with you. Like, I think there's a lot of good things that are going on for Guyana right now. That oil find just off the coast, I think, is going to bring a lot of money to the country. And of course, you know, Venezuela, that sort of fight, I don't even know where that is necessarily in terms of how the Venezuela and them are arguing about who owns it. But I think, you know, it's things like that sort of cast maybe a little bit of doubt on my end in terms of the viability of the place as a jurisdiction. But you know what? You've got like a world-class mine building team that's going in there. And these guys, this is not their first rodeo when it comes to, you know, developing something inside the Guyana Shield, which of course includes Guyana as a country. So they know how to operate there. And I think they're going to make the right decisions when it comes to how to deal with the government and the local communities. And, you know, Brazil, Tocantinzinho is the perfect example of how they've already benefited or constructed fairly in a, what can be a tough jurisdiction. You know, Brazil to me is sort of in that same spectrum of risk as Guyana, and they've made it work. So a lot goes to the management team and their success and their past success in these jurisdictions. And so for me, I'm much more apt to be comfortable with a deal like this, just because I have so much confidence in the G Mining team. And I think Guyana, you know, could be on the precipice of being something more significant than it is today and have less trepidation from investors. But I don't think that, you know, we should be completely blind to the risks, because whether it's Guyana, like I said, Peru, Chile, we've seen risk in all of them. And you know what, more and more jurisdictional risk is ubiquitous. You know, Canada and the States have their own spectrum of risk. So it's out there everywhere. You have to be aware of it. But again, it comes back to the team, I think, in this particular deal. And I'm quite comfortable going in there and being invested in G Mining.
So what are the catalysts you're looking for news flow-wise, balancing out the first pour cash flow from Tocantinzinho and then also the then building of this other asset? What do you watch for news flow-wise that kind of confirms this thesis that you like this move?
The first gold pour is definitely the first thing. And then you look for declared commercial production. I think those are the two things where you could, especially at this gold price, I think there is definitely some money to be made on that differential. And then I think, you know, when the deal closes, then I think the speculative upside can be kind of put into high gear. And again, I think it's kind of gold price dependent, because, you know, the interest is definitely spiked with this latest push. But you know, if we go back and don't maintain these levels, then maybe you see sort of an outflow. But I think the speculative is on the gold pour, the commercial production, and then how they outline their plan for reunion once the deal is actually closed. Because I'll just add this, is that I think, again, this is about as good as it gets when it comes to projects out there that aren't owned by majors already. And so my guess is that this was on, you know, the likes of Barrick as a possible target at some point in the future. So I would almost guarantee they're looking at the deal and seeing if it makes sense for them to come in over the top. So I would look for that deal closing to be maybe the third point into speculative upside into G Mining. And then, of course, once they actually do own it, they're going to outline the plan and the sort of the timeline to getting that thing developed. And it's quite exciting.
Brian, it kind of brings up a general question about M&A in the sector and these development projects getting scooped up. A lot of people bemoan the fact that they haven't seen M&A in their stock yet. But if we look across the board, there's been a lot of M&A. You know, looking at Sabina being taken out by B2 Gold, looking at Gold Standard Ventured and Contact Gold being taken out by Orla Mining, looking at Marathon being taken out by Calibre, Osino's being taken out. I mean, now you've got Reunion Gold taking out. Is there an experience where some of these bigger producers better get on the stick soon before all the dates get invited to the prom?
Yeah, of course. And I think that's sort of where the excitement should be, is to see how this really could kind of spur or spiral into sort of a frenzy. Again, especially if the gold price stays where it is, then a lot of the valuations for these companies is much higher in terms of the discrepancy between value and price. So I think that is what I think a lot of people, you know, the Lassonde curve is very real. And I think all the companies you basically described are all mostly companies that are in that sort of orphan period or the trough of the curve. And there's not as much interest, and therefore a lot of retail aren't in it. But the big funds, there's definitely smart money that look at companies when nobody cares. And, you know, so they've made money. And so I think it's just a matter of time before that trickles down. And in that frenzy type of moment, you're going to see probably these bigger companies and the mid-tiers look at less developed. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to have a feasibility study for them to want to buy it. But I think that takes more, you know, action in the market overall, and probably valuations in the equities go up, which is kind of odd, right? Because you would think that senior mining companies would want to maybe buy as much as they can when the prices are low, but it doesn't always, you know, end up that way. But it should be interesting. And I do expect to see more deals and more and more as, you know, people, money floods into the sector. I think you're going to see the deals kind of frenzy, and they'll trickle down into some of the more speculative companies that are out there.
And that just keeps building on itself, too. That's an exciting market when we do see that kind of action. Let's move over to another company that released news earlier this week. Abra Silver released a $20 million strategic investment from Kinross and Central Porto. This is 4% stake for each of those companies. So it's just an early on kind of starter position for Kinross. But they did also form a regional partnership in Argentina with Kinross to look at new assets. What were your thoughts on this deal and Kinross entering the story?
I think it's a great deal. And I think that the percentages from both companies set up really nicely for Abra Silver share price to appreciate. And if everything goes well, for those positions to be added to at higher prices. First, like on the Porto, whatever the energy utilities company is, I forget the exact name, but, you know, I think that's a passive investment, meaning that, you know, they're just happy to kind of diversify their portfolio within Argentina and obviously see the value in Diblilos and, you know, want some exposure to it. So I don't think you see that position expand. I also don't think you're going to see them dump that on, you know, a 30% rise. It's going to be sticky hands. On the Kinross side of things, Kinross has not been afraid to acquire or put their finger into different companies. We've seen a number of deals done, Great Bear being probably the latest and greatest. But a 4% position, I think, is that sort of tepid move in where it's not that big in saying that, oh, yeah, you know, this is definitely something we want to buy. But it shows that they're interested. And I think that, you know, as long as Argentina continues on its path to open up, the most important point, that cash can flow in and out of the country freely without these, you know, blue chip swaps and these other kind of deals where companies have to get money in and out of the country. I think that, you know, Kinross takes a bigger stake and hopefully it's at a much higher share price. You know, in talking to the company, you know, 90% of that money that they've raised is going to go into exploration. And I think that's phenomenal thing to hear, because, you know, we've just touched the oxides. they've poked holes in all the easy stuff, all the shallow stuff, but now they're going to go to that porphyry arc to the north. I'm guessing you might see some deeper holes underneath the oxides, hit on those sulfides that we saw. If you go all the way back to that phase one program, some terrific copper grades, like high percentages over decent widths. I think you're going to see them go after these things. And considering the strength of the system we see in the oxides and what the geophysics and the sampling show us from the surrounding area, I think that the probability here is quite good that their exploration will uncover something. It's just how big is probably the biggest question. So to me, these are excellent deals. It shows that there's interest. And I think it only helps when you have, you know, the likes of Filo, Jose Maria, you know, them continue to be successful, because I think that's going to push more companies like Kinross to take a look at Argentina and take a look at projects like Diblilos. You know, the other side of that 4% position is that it might be smallish, but it also leaves the door wide open for someone to come in over the top and take a much bigger position, hopefully at a higher price, or just take them completely out. So I really like the deal. Cashed up, exploration potential, you got the downside protection in the resource, and you've got a quality management team, all the things I like to see.
Yeah, Brian, and it's interesting because they also just penned a deal not too long ago with Teck Resources at their La Coipita project, which has also got a copper focus. So you got both Teck and Kinross coming into Argentina for the first time, and it could open the door for more majors to be in the area. There's also been a flurry of activity as far as the lithium projects there and development projects, and a lot of companies moving into that side, especially in Salta. But one of the things that John was excited about when we talked to him earlier this week was the brain trust between not just Kinross, but that utility company, Central Porto. They can help on things like permitting and on timelines and working with government agencies and obviously power generation for the development of the mine. So John said, what I'm most excited about is the brain trust between these two larger companies. On a larger discussion, would you like to see more junior companies partner with majors just for the sharing of knowledge?
I think so. I think it all depends. You know, usually for me, it's at what price and sort of what it brings. I think the best part about this deal is the fact that, you know, Abra's market cap is around 200 million, right? So this 4% position is not really dilutive. It's not, you know, the Kinross is paying, I think, fairly fair price to take a 4% position. I think in some companies it can be too early. The major can swallow up too big of a slice of the company and probably garner too much control. So it depends. It depends how the major is going to participate. Because my other experience is that they can just be so slow in everything that they want to do. And so I like, whether if it's a joint venture or prospect generator, these deals with the majors, yeah, shared brain trust. But I also like, you know, the junior to be in that position, if that's the company I'm invested in, to have some control and to be able to push things forward, to be able to talk about the results that they're getting, all of these things. So depending on how the deal's structured, yeah, it can be a huge plus. And it opens it up to like a direct person or direct company that might acquire the company if things go well. But on the other side, I think I've seen enough deals that, you know, it can also be sort of a hindrance depending on price and what the deal actually is.
Fair enough. Usually it is good, though, when you do get a major on board with a junior. But you are right. Hey, it depends on the stage, too, and how much the major is taking. Kinross, though, just going to be a 4% holder at the tail end of that investment. What'd you think about that PFS that Abra Silver released at the tail end of March? It had some fairly solid numbers around it, and the NPV did increase. What were some of your thoughts on that PFS?
Oh, I think it was excellent. You know, I think the fact that they included the reserves and that the reserves showed a high conversion rate. I think the CapEx numbers are all realistic. I basically view it as shovel ready. And yeah, I don't think you can say that for all the PFSs that are out there. Obviously, PFS is a lot much more detailed than a PEA usually. But I thought this one was exceptionally strong and shows the upside potential in that project. And I think maybe the market was a little bit over expecting from an economic standpoint. I'm not sure. Like some of the emails that I got following the deal is people were expecting these much higher NPVs. And I think given the CapEx and, you know, the tax regime that Argentina has right now, I think it was right in line with what at least what I expected. And the other side to that is if you consider what Milei is doing in Argentina, and if he does kind of move tax cuts to where they could go, you know, you're talking probably another 100 million capped onto that NPV just in the tax break. And so you add 100 million to that NPV at that, I forget what the baseline gold price and silver price were. I think it was like $1,924 for silver. That makes a huge deal. That makes them stand out even more. And so very robust economics. I think this is exactly what you want to see with that exploration upside. And so I was quite happy with the PFS and think that most majors look at that and think that, you know, this is basically shovel ready considering the type of mineralization and the deposit type it is.
Okay. But again, you like the exploration potential as well. So a lot for us to discuss there in terms of Abra Silver. And again, if people want more information, want to hear from the company, we interviewed them earlier this week. Moving out from just those couple company news events, I want to talk to you more about portfolio management then. Because look, no denying that we were in a 3 to 4 year bear market where pretty much all the stocks, even the quality ones, moved lower outside of just a handful of examples that bucked the trend. What are you doing now within your portfolio? Are you staying very concentrated? Are you taking on new positions? Give us some insights here.
Sure. And, you know, I'll talk about exactly what I'm doing with my portfolio, but I'll preface the whole idea of portfolio allocation starts with each individual investor. Investors need to take a look at their risk profile, their financial position, and kind of understand and think about how they want to allocate money because there's a spectrum of risk across these types of companies. So now talking about my own portfolio allocation. So I'm constantly moving money around within the portfolio, but I do try to keep certain percentages in each of the, what I would say are three main categories. So exploration, development, and production / royalty. I like to keep probably 10 to 15% in exploration, 60 to 70 in developers, and then the remaining 20 to 30 in producers or royalty companies. And to me, this fits not only my knowledge level, but my risk profile in terms of how I like to deploy cash. So what I do is basically on this last blip, I've seen some profits come, and mainly in the developers, and developers have definitely outweighed some of the other categories. And if you look at the newsletter, I won't say which two exploration companies I just bought, but I did buy two. And so I allocated some of those profits from the developers into the exploration, because I do, like I said, want to keep 10 to 15% of the portfolio allocated to exploration, because that 10 or 15%, if you're lucky enough, can become a much bigger percentage if the companies find something. So my whole idea is that I'm moving cash into some of those new investments. This so by chance has to be on the riskier side, but it's because my portfolio had become out of weight into what I like to usually keep in terms of percentages. And so that can work the other way too. You know, the expiration works out, and then you take some of those and you buy some of the less risky stuff, some of the real stuff, some of the producers, the royalty companies, those types of companies where your downside protection is really, really good, but your upside may not be as high. But over the long haul, those are the only companies really I think you can hold for multiple years without being too concerned about where the market is exactly headed.
Now, we've talked a lot about precious metals, and I feel like we were just talking about precious metals there. What about diversifying into other commodity sectors, other commodity stocks?
I think it's an absolute must. I think, you know, especially with my knowledge level and experience, you know, coming from steel manufacturing, that sort of engineering background, I guess I'm more comfortable with a wide range of metals. But I would say for most investors, being diversified across the spectrum of the different metals is a must. If you look at the bull markets that we've had over the last, let's say, 4 years, it's a great example. You go back to 2020, the precious metals were really the leading area where you're going to make money. That sort of flipped. You know, 2021 was more probably focused on nickel. There was a ton of money to be made. Then you go to 2022, and really the focus was probably on lithium. Lithium spikes, all the lithium companies. We have this, you know, proliferation of you know, 100 new lithium companies, and really there's a bull market there. And then this last year, 2023, I would say it was the year of uranium. And it's not that maybe necessarily any of these metals are sort of out of favor, but you can see the theme here is that each one sort of takes its turn, and the bull markets where you really make your money flip and they end. And so to me, you need to stay within your knowledge, which is a big thing. But I think you do need to be diversified. You need to be putting those profits into the sectors where the attention's not there, because I think for most of these metals, especially if you look at the big ones, not the small niche markets, but you know, gold, silver, copper, nickel, these things are all going to take their turns having bull markets, and you need to buy them when they're cheap. And the way you do that is taking profits in the bull market cycle and siphoning them through that. And so 100%, you need to be invested across the spectrum. And that's what I try to do.
So true. There's a lot of money that just rotates within different commodities. And that's why you see different commodities running at different times. Brian, thank you so much for your time on this weekend show. Very interesting to hear some of those deals, some of the recent news that caught not just our attention, but also the market's attention. Again, if you want to follow along with Brian, check out his website, Junior Stock Review, and subscribe to his premium letter to find out the stocks that he is holding. Brian, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Corey.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. In these final two segments of the first hour, we are going to be focusing a bit more just on the markets from a more technical basis, short, medium, and even long term, as we are chatting with Dana Lyons, fund manager based out of Chicago, also editor of the Lion Share Pro website. Now, Dana, starting off, markets broadly showing some weakness right as we turn the corner into Q2. The markets have been trending a bit lower. They've lost a lot of that upward momentum that they had for pretty much 6 months. The S&P, as we're recording this, is down about 4% for just this month. And it's kind of broad-based, I think, that we have seen a lot of this weakness. What are your models telling you about this general rollover we've seen in the market? Are you have any serious concerns here that this could turn into something much bigger?
Yeah, thanks, Corey. Our data does not suggest it's that a major top is necessarily in place. But right now, our models are headed lower. So I think in the near term, certainly there could be more corrective action here. So we are playing a little bit more defense over the last couple weeks here. I would expect to see another down leg before this correction is over. But it's more or less, I think, sometimes I hesitate to use the term, but kind of like a technical correction. As you said, we're hitting on all cylinders coming into Q2. We had some of the major averages of Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P specifically ran right up to that 127 Fibonacci extension from the 2022 decline, banged right off it, and pulled right back from there. So, you know, that could be part of the reason. Certainly makes sense to us. Whatever the reason, our stuff is headed down right now, our models. And that suggests that in the near term, playing a little bit more defense, like I said, hedging. But in the longer term, in the intermediate term, the signs still to us don't point to a major top being in place, at least in those larger cap averages.
Well, Dana, just diving under the surface, I'm sure it's similar in some of the individual sectors, but let's dive into a couple of them. In the past, we've talked about things like healthcare and biotech, the utilities. We've talked about consumer staples, all the different sectors under the surface. Are there any that are sticking out to you that are maybe showing a little more strength or that maybe have a little bit further to roll over before you'd get more aggressive on the long side?
Yeah, right now, correlations are pretty high in this correction, meaning, you know, most everything is getting hit. There aren't a lot of heroes out there, at least domestically. Some of the international markets are holding up better, and some of the commodity-related issues certainly holding up a little bit better. But across the general sectors, most everything trading basically together right now, which is normal for a correction. Like I mentioned, I would expect to see another down leg here, at least one, before this correction is over. So more or less at this point, you're seeing everything selling off. At the same time, you're not seeing any sort of new relative strength leaders emerge just yet. This correction probably got to run its course a little bit longer before we see signs of that. But like you mentioned, we were looking for the initial parts of the dip. We were looking for kind of newer relative strength to buy that wasn't so extended, something like healthcare and biotech. That obviously was too early, as markets in general were just starting to roll over. So certainly those haven't played out yet. But looking for, as this correction runs its course, signs of resiliency from certain sectors, and looking for areas that kind of bottom out first and then hold up better as maybe we hit new lows in the major averages. That might be a kind of a heads up on what might be a leader going forward.
So Dana, since you do see this correction maybe continuing at least for the near term, what's a hedging strategy that you're undertaking so that you can keep some of your longs on, but you also don't have to miss out on some of that downside, some of that weakness?
Absolutely. We just, right now, we're just a couple things, raising a little bit of cash, selling, trimming some of our longs into the bounce. But for the most part, most of our longs have held up on an intermediate term basis pretty well. So once this correction is over, we expect them to respond back to the upside. So we've held on to most of our long exposure and instead just hedging them with some inverse funds on the major averages, the S&P, the Dow, for now into the bounce, getting short there. Because again, don't necessarily want to dump our long positions if they're still relatively solid from a technical standpoint. But certainly with our models headed lower, we do want to play some more defense. So we've been using, again, those inverse funds on the major averages and also going long volatility with a VIX up above key technical levels. The benefit of the doubt is still to the upside. And especially if we get another spike down in stocks and up in volatility, those volatility products can move pretty quickly and add a little bit of juice to your hedges.
Well, just following up on that, Dana, volatility trading is a tough game. We get people that write into us sometimes and ask if they should be using volatility indexes to play either side of it from the long or the short. My experience has just been that those are very quick moves, like you just mentioned, and they can almost be over in a blink of an eye if you don't act on them. How do you use volatility as a hedge without getting stuck on the other side of the trade?
Yeah, you're 100% correct. We typically only trade them in corrections because they can, but both the long and short can remain pretty much dormant for a long time if volatility is subdued. So, but in a corrective environment, behavior, you know, price behavior is a little bit more predictable. Usually get that sell-off reflexive bounce and then some testing lower. So a couple things to keep in mind. I never like to chase volatility just because of the swiftness of the moves, but also the size of the moves. It's similar to shorting. I don't like to short into the lows, into the down moves. I like to wait for bounces and then put shorts on into that. Same thing with volatility. Don't like to buy it into spikes or sell it into pullbacks. Like to kind of fade the big moves. And then if we do get a move in our direction, be quick to take at least partial profits because, as you mentioned, those moves can go quickly and they can end quickly. So always a little bit more eager to trade those vehicles as they are, you know, purely trading vehicles, certainly not buy and hold vehicles. So, but usually only employ those in corrective type environments like we're in now.
So Dana, this week we have seen some earnings out of some of the larger tech companies, and we have actually seen some negative reactions to those earnings, a lot around just how much they're spending to develop these AI systems. Do you see, with this recent weakness and a bit of rotation of money, do you see market leadership changing at all?
Yeah, leadership's always changing. It depends on the time frame, though. Looking at tech, certainly it's kind of the whipping boy right now in this correction. But if you zoom out a little bit, still not in bad shape. You know, we saw some of the averages, the NASDAQ, XLK, some of the generic type tech funds broke out to all-time highs, similar to the NASDAQ or the S&P, and kind of pulling back and correcting right now. Digesting those gains, if you will, and some other tech subsectors like software and you mentioned off air cybersecurity, which ran up and pretty much smacked into those highs from 2-3 years ago and are basically consolidating those gains right now. So I would say that leadership isn't necessarily over in the longer term, but in the shorter term, certainly maybe got ahead of itself and needed a breather, which we're seeing right now. So it's hard to say whether those moves are done to the upside or we're just seeing kind of a breather and a little bit of rotation in terms of leadership as those tech sectors do digest those gains here.
Well, Dana, you mentioned another hedge you had for the domestic equities was that some of the international markets were doing well despite some of the corrective moves in the U.S. markets. What international markets have your attention right now?
Yeah, and perhaps I shouldn't have used the word hedge because typically when, especially in a major correction, you're going to see stocks of all markets pretty much eventually go in the same direction. But we have seen relative resilience in some of the international markets during this little correction that we've seen this month. some of those including India, which has been on a nice run for a couple of years. We still like it a lot. That's held up very well, particularly the small caps. Still like Japan a lot. It has been on a huge run. Maybe that's maybe it's time for a bit of a breather there as well, as it tests those all-time highs from, you know, 34 years ago. So wouldn't be surprised to see a correction, at least in terms of time, in Japan. So wouldn't be chasing necessarily there, but in the longer term, definitely like the prospects for the Japanese market as opposed to the U.S. market. And some of the European averages have held up okay relative to the U.S. A lot of that certainly has to do with the currency effects and kind of the dollar remaining stronger. But there are ways to play that, hedging the currency, which help. And also Argentina, of all places, the ETF ARGT has been holding up extremely well and looks poised, from our view, to move further to the upside. So those are a couple international markets that I think have held up better and maybe poised for more profitability going forward than the U.S.
Let's also talk about the treasury market then, bonds, because look, the bonds have been selling off. Rates have been moving higher, quite aggressively higher too, as we're recording this. 10-year at 4.7%. It wasn't that long ago, really, just at the middle of October, that interest rates topped out. The 10-year topped out right about 4.9%. So we're getting very close to that level. Dana, is that a key level to watch for the 10-year, that about 4.9% level, to see if it turns around there?
Yeah, certainly those former highs from, back in October, up 4.9% or 5%. Obviously, that'll be a key level. The major level, in our view, is that 4% level, which we broke out, in the third quarter last year, made a run, pulled back and tested that level and held that level. So as bond bears, long-term bond bears, the benefit of doubt is certainly to the upside in yields. We did surmise that in the near term, we might see another down move, another test that 4% in yields, and possibly even break, just due to the quality of the rally that we saw in the fourth quarter last year. Obviously, that hasn't played out yet. I wouldn't dismiss the possibility of that. But again, as long as we're above that 4% level, I would say the benefit is certainly to the upside, with 5% obviously being some key resistance, like you mentioned.
Well, Dana, you know, we got to ask you about the commodity complex. A lot of people listening to this call are in a lot of the resource stocks, but we've seen some strength in gold and silver and copper and oil. Nothing dramatic over the last couple of weeks, but how are you looking at the commodity complex?
Very favorably still. We saw a rally, then we saw, kind of cool off for 6 months or whatever it was. For a while, actually really closer to a year after topping out in 2022, saw a nice cooling off period digesting those gains. In our view, it's quite likely that's, setting the stage for that next up leg. So, and it's like you mentioned, it's across the board, the metals, energy, to some extent, certainly we would favor the long side there right now. Much of the agriculture space looks good. So there's a lot to like, certainly in the longer term, especially in the commodity space. So we'll continue to have an eye on that space. And our antenna is certainly up there looking for opportunities.
What about the gold miners space too? Something like GDX, which just broke out intraday to a 52-week high a couple weeks ago, and it's hanging right around that level right now. How important is that 52-week high level, and do you see it being broken and being held above?
GDX and all the miners, really, silver miners, copper miners, especially copper miners, been leading the way. They obviously, with the run that they went on, this the pullback this month has been not that egregious, I guess, considering that the run they were on for the month prior, 2 months prior. So pretty good action, I would say, in the miner space during this correction. Definitely with our bullish view on gold and much of the commodity space, definitely bullish on miners and looking for opportunity to buy dips there, whether it's gold, like I said, gold miners, silver miners, copper miners. I think all positioned for further upside, I would say. GDX, those highs from last year up around 36, certainly a spot to keep an eye on, as is those highs from 2022 up just above 40. But we've got good momentum going in the short term. I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of that resistance getting taken out eventually, especially if gold does hold the breakout level and continues higher. So pretty bullish over here on that entire complex.
All right, so bullish on the metals mining stocks, but what about the energy space? You said you were constructive on it. Are you looking at something like the larger oil producers in XLE or some of the smaller one in XOP, oil services and OIH? How are you looking at the energy stocks?
Mostly across the board, you know. XLE had that nice breakout. As long as we hold that that breakout area, there's lots of room, because that sector certainly, like we've talked about, pretty much took last year's rally off as it digested gains from its move higher into 2022. So certainly there is enough fuel, no pun intended, behind the breakouts to sustain those breakouts. Oil services, also, they've been lagging a little bit of late, but did pull back and held some key technical levels earlier this week. So there's certainly potential there, but just some of the broader energy plays, like you mentioned, XLE, got another global energy ETF, IXC, that looks basically the same. Nice consolidation for a year or so breakout. And as long as we hold above those breakout levels, definitely a lot of potential there. And if we do test those breakout levels, we'll be buying pretty aggressively.
What about other energy markets, like some of that new school green energy type of market, solar, any of those areas that have not been rallying at all, actually? They've been lagging kind of that old school energy, the oil market. Do you see any opportunities in that green energy market?
Well, seeing as though, you know, we espouse the relative strength philosophy of investment selection, as those have been laggards, we don't really have those on our radars right now. We have nothing against them as an investment prospect if they do start performing. But right now, not on our radar.
Yeah, tan for solar and fan for wind, not looking so hot right now. But what about the uranium sector, which ties into the nuclear side of things? Any thoughts on uranium equities?
Yeah, and we've talked about uranium and the miners. Kind of neither here nor there at the moment as it consolidates. I do think there is more upside. They had a nice run, kind of consolidating right now, those gains as well. Haven't broken down too bad, so that's a plus. So still in overall, broadly hitting higher highs and higher lows. So I do like the prospects going forward once this kind of corrective action is over for both uranium and the miners, but kind of stuck in a rut at this moment, maybe as the broader equity market kind of corrects itself. So, but we do have long positions, like I said, in uranium and uranium miners. We've trimmed some of it, but do like the prospects going forward as long as we maintain those higher highs and higher lows there.
How about Bitcoin too? Bitcoin is off of its highs. It's, I guess, kind of in a trading range that it's been in for the last couple months here after breaking out and making that run up over 70,000. Bitcoin, as we're talking, trading right around 65,000. Do you see any moves here in uranium, either breaking to the upside or the downside?
Well, it's kind of held up pretty well. It's been fairly resilient after that move up to in March when it tested those all-time highs. So The fact that it hasn't pulled back worse or further is probably pretty constructive in my view. 60,000 where we held in the recent pullback is the first technical level that we were watching that would be key to hold. We break that, then it's probably down around 51,000 or so. That would be probably a little bit more inviting spot for us to buy the dip on Ethereum. Similar story, but a little bit weaker. Probably 2,900 is spot we've been watching there. But both of them kind of consolidating that run they went on to start the year and holding up reasonably well. So I would say there's decent chance, decent odds that we do eventually break out and put in new highs once this kind of consolidation corrective action is over. So I would say leaning long. We do have a small long position on, but I would say more apt to be buying dips here in the crypto space than to be sellers.
All right, Dana, thank you so much for going around on a number of these markets. I really value your outlook, what your models show you for all these different areas, because you look at them without any sort of bias here, letting your models tell you where the momentum is and playing that momentum. Pleasure having you on the show. And again, if you want to follow along with Dana, go visit the Lion's Share Pro website, which will be linked within our weekend show postings. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. I hope you all enjoyed it, and I hope you all go back through the week through our website and podcast, even on our YouTube channel now, to listen to all the daily editorials and company updates we recorded throughout the week. Dana, thanks again for your time, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.